everyone needs a pastor. A visit to the Pastor's Study brings biblically faithful pastoral ministry to you and pastoral ministry from those with proven experience in Christian service. Our time together will be lively, sometimes controversial, always useful, and never dull. Welcome to the study of Pastor Bill Shishko.
Pastor Bill Shishko here with you, and it's great to have you with us for today's visit to the Pastor's Study. We're in the age of a global village. Radio, television, the World Wide Web, YouTube, Instagram, social media of every form, all bring the whole world to us moment by moment. And while this has the potential to drain our senses, to paralyze us into inactivity, it also has the potential to drive us to service, to prod and to prompt us to some form of activity. Now, you couple that with a world-embracing gospel, a message meant for the discipling of the nations, plus the promptings of the Holy Spirit who blessedly burdens Christians to love their neighbors as themselves, and you have the recipe for missions of every sort. Now, some Christians devote themselves and are called to full-time missionary service on fields both domestic and foreign. Others sense the need and have the desire for just doing something to help with this massive enterprise of seeing people from every tongue and tribe and nation become followers of Jesus Christ as Lord. Now, this something increasingly takes the form of what are called STMs, short-term missions, taking a week or two or sometimes more to help with projects in our nation and other nations, projects that give people the opportunity to be part of the action of the kingdom of God. And we should be struck by the explosive growth in the number of those who have served and who are serving now, even as I speak, as short-term missionaries. 1989, 120,000. 1998, 450,000. 2003, 1 million. And in 2016, 2,200,000 short-term missionaries for total cost. And, of course, these are all estimates, but a total cost of, believe it or not, $1,600,000,000, all in some way or the other for this work of short-term missions. Now, on the one hand, this is thrilling. The planning, the prayer, the giving, the actual service all build a deeper consciousness of the needs of the world. Now, on the other hand, many question the value of projects that do for others what they are well able to do or can be trained to do for themselves. And they also question the value of rapid come-and-go trips that don't build the relationships or community necessary for the sustained benefit of the people supposedly being ministered to. Now, are these quick tours honestly the best stewardship of time, talents, and treasures? Do we think of ourselves as short-term heroes or as long-term partners? Is the doling out of American wealth promoting cultures of dependence? And thinking even more deeply, are we really doing this for the benefit of them or for us, and perhaps for the church that sent us? Now, these are challenging questions, to be sure. And short of full-time missionary service for ordained pastors, teachers, evangelists, and deacons, is there a better way for people to serve the kingdom of God in an approach that truly helps more than it harms? Well, there's a longer-term missionary opportunity that some call missionary associates. For a period of a year or two, qualified men and women serve, usually on foreign fields, in ways that can be more of a blessing than a burden to full-time missionaries on the field, those interested in this kind of commitment, and it is a big commitment, have their gifts and graces for effective service assessed. Are they fascinated by different cultures? Are they put off by them? Are they flexible in being able to adapt to very different views of time, work, wealth, and leisure? Is there a genuine willingness to become all things to all people that by all means they might save some? How can their gifts be genuinely useful in a specific missionary situation? Missionary associates take time to learn something of the history, the culture, and the mores of the nation and the people among whom they will be living and serving. And along with going with the hearts of servants, they also go with the hearts of learners. You see, they too are poor and needy, and they're ready to learn from the poor and needy ones the Lord will put in their path as part of God's work of ministering to them. You see, God is on a mission for the missionary as well as for the mission field. What's the experience of a short-term missionary who gets more than a two-week high from the opportunity to travel to a distant land, see the sights, carry out a brief project, and then return home to get an exciting report at church or at churches? What motivates a person to take 1 or 2 years out of his or her life to leave familiar family, friends, and surroundings to go to a remote place with very different people and a totally different language or languages? What's it like to get past a quick romance with foreign missions and learn the hard realities of getting along with other members of mission teams, enduring strange sicknesses, eating foods far removed from pizza and McDonald's hamburgers, and understanding cultural practices that are, to say the least, vastly different than what, as Americans, we have come to think of as the norm for everyone? Why would anyone want to go that far in serving the Lord? Well, all of this brings us to our topic on today's visit to the Pastor's Study, what I'm calling the longer short-term missions experience, the experience of being a missionary associate for a year or two or more. And despite my seemingly gloomy and foreboding introductions, I want you to think seriously about how you can be part of missionary work that really helps more than it harms. Now, I have two guests today, both young women who've served as missionary associates with the Orthodox Presbyterian Church, and each has served on a very different mission field. My first guest is Miss Jackie Belchi, who served on what we'll simply call a closed field, a nation officially closed to the gospel and its missionaries, but open to Christians who come and serve in different capacities. Now, I need to mention this now because I tend to forget it when I get engrossed in the conversation, but you are invited and encouraged to call with your questions. The number to call is 631-955-5400, 631-955-5400. But let's have Jackie have the first few words after mine. Jackie, what prompted you to want to become a longer short-term missionary?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me, and I'm really excited to talk about this, as obviously it's very near and dear to my heart. In terms of what prompted me, I would say there was no big moment, but it was a lot of little things and a lot of little ways that the Lord was leading me that I didn't even realize. Someone once asked me while I was getting ready to graduate and thinking about future job prospects, well, what excites you? What do you want to do that makes you feel really excited? Because if you do that, then doors will open, and it doesn't matter if it's something that's so specific to what you've been trained to do, but what excites you? And at that moment, I thought, you know, what really excites me is sharing the gospel with people and hearing their reaction to it, especially when they do have an open mind and an open heart. On top of that, I also was given the book Don't Waste Your Life by John Piper, and that, I would say, really just pushed me in the best sense of the word.
A good pastor gave me that book,
yes. And I think at that moment, I was surprised by the title. It catches you off guard, but it really did push me a lot. And that good pastor also met with me and unbeknownst to me, had already been considering me for a particular field. And those two things, his thinking of me and my thinking of missions came together. We met together, and the pieces came together at that point, and he asked if I would go for a year, and I said, yeah.
Now, we don't want to mention the specific field for a lot of reasons. Are you able to describe that closed field that you were on, and for how long?
I was there for 1.5 years.
1.5 years, okay. And you're hoping to go back.
I am hoping to go back. Okay. Yeah.
Hey, can you describe that, some of that closed field, without telling us what the field is itself, or is that not possible?
I will say this. Though being a closed field, I would say as individuals, the people are open, and they're open in two ways. They're very welcoming to foreigners. In fact, almost to an unfair degree sometimes, we're treated as first-class citizens above everyone else. And so in that sense, I felt very welcomed. And they're also very open to the gospel. And so, we are strategic and we're careful. But I would say in terms of it being closed, there's an openness. Secondly, what I can say without revealing too much is that I was in a very unique area of this country where there are actually two different cultures happening at the same time. We're in a very remote area where there is a large percentage of minorities who influence that culture in terms of language. There are two languages spoken and two official languages, really. There, if you go to a restaurant, there are things in two languages and two different cultures. So that was something that was unexpected, but also very exciting for me to get to experience those two things at the same time.
Well, we want to talk a little bit more about that actual experience.
Right.
Let me back up a little bit. How, Jackie, did you prepare yourself for your time abroad? Once you knew you would be going to this field, I don't think you had a lot of time to prepare, but how did you prepare yourself?
No, there was not a lot of time. There was a lot of prayer and a lot of asking people about what I should do. I met with people who have served in that exact field. And that was really a blessing to know that they were nearby and I could ask all of my questions. I wanted to familiarize myself as much as I could with this culture because I was not aware of so many things. I was encouraged to try the food and to listen to the language, get some documentaries and travel guides, and really just get a feel for what I was about to step into culturally. And also, in another way, to be prepared for the work I was about to do. As you know, it is a closed country. We go there with a job. And so I was getting prepared for that, and I was getting prepared for just embracing that culture.
Now, did you have, I'll use the phrase here, did you have kind of a particular burden for this country beforehand, or was it primarily the opportunity, and you said, hey, it's an opportunity, I'll go?
Honestly speaking, no, I didn't have a particular burden for this country in particular. I had a particular burden for just sharing with the lost, and that manifested itself in trying this country as a good fit, and it turned out to really be a good fit.
Yeah. Yeah, I happen to know very well that pastor where you and yeah, it was clear that God was preparing you for that field.
Right.
Can you tell us what kind of work that you did on this closed field?
So I was an English teacher, which is high demand in many countries now. So I was teaching at a university English.
And yeah, but flesh that out a little bit. How big were your classes? How often did you work with the students? Did you have opportunities to, I'm sure you had opportunities to meet with them individually.
Yeah. And that's really where most of our evangelism happens, what we call friendship evangelism. So I had approximately 100 students per semester. So it was university. We had a semester system that's very similar to here. And each of my classes had about 25 students. So in total, about 100. So the cool thing about that is you're directly communicating with local people every day. In the classroom, the opportunities are not totally non-existent, believe it or not. There are really good opportunities to use English and just come up with discussion topics such as family life or love or morality even. I talked about justice in my classes. I even brought up sacrifice, and we sort of talked about why that's so meaningful for people. And you're just planting these ideas and getting the students thinking. And on the other hand, I meet with the students outside of class. So there are homework assignments that require them to meet me one-on-one or two-on-one and have an interview to practice their English. And students who express a further, deeper interest in practicing their English more, at that point, was always a good chance to say, well, if you really want to study English with me, would you mind if we used the Bible and we can read the Bible together in English? And many of them were open to that.
Now, were you at any point afraid that you would get arrested for doing this? Or did you, fully realizing we're in the Lord's hands? Or did you sense that you were just doing things wisely and you'd be okay?
I think that varies depending on the situation. Working with the students on the campus, it does tend to feel safer in some sense. But I do think there is a fear of being, and we are cautious. I can't text a student and tell them what we're doing. I don't want to use any kind of communication that's written or recorded when I'm talking about Bible study or inviting them to church. So there is a cautiousness that we need to have as we deal with these things. And then the other thing is I stand out in this country. So if I am going to bring a student to church, I need to be careful about how many students are traveling with me or what route we take to get to this particular location. So there are some times where you feel that fear, and there have been people working there who had been interrogated by police or had been stopped for what they were doing and asked, you know, we know what you're doing, please stop. And we tried very hard to be respectful for that. We're not there to step on toes or do things that we shouldn't be doing. But if a student asks you a question on your own time, you are allowed to answer honestly. I mean, it's okay that we are Christians. In fact, they know that we are Christians.
Yeah, so if someone asked you just right up front about your faith, you were free to answer that question.
Yeah,
something like what we deal with in actually the public school systems in the United States as well.
Yeah.
Again, let me back up a little bit more. What was it like leaving your family, your friends, and your familiar surroundings to go to a country you had never been to before?
Well, it certainly was challenging. It was challenging to leave my friends and my family. It was not as hard as I thought in the sense that you're so busy when you first get there that sometimes you don't even think about being home. I think that comes maybe a few months in, and that homesickness, it comes in waves. You miss particular people, and I think you feel this especially strongly if something is happening at home that people are rejoicing or mourning, and you can't be there with them. I think that makes it difficult. And in that sense, I think there's also this excitement that we have all this technology today. You know, I can Skype my family, and I can even email pretty frequently, and that's a blessing, but also sometimes it can be a big distraction, and you have one foot on the field and one foot at home, and I think sometimes it tugs at your heart even more. But for me, homesickness wasn't such a huge problem. I think it's different for every person. It depends what you're leaving behind. I know there was one fellow who left his wife for a year, which I thought was very hard, and I couldn't imagine doing that. So for me, I think the hardest thing actually was leaving my church and my church family. And, you know, now I'm in this situation where I'm worshiping in a foreign language, and even with translation, that can be very hard to feel like I'm really being fed, and I'm having that fellowship time with my brothers and sisters. I missed that a lot.
Yeah. How did you, I mean, this is not an inexpensive project. How did you raise the funds to get over there to sustain you while you were there?
So I raised funds via individuals, and I started by writing a letter, and I sent that out to the people in my church and other friends and family that I thought might be supportive of this trip. And after that, there was a certain goal that I needed to reach, and I reached it, which was wonderful. And actually, while I was there, I was originally intending to be there for 1 year. And at that point, I decided I wanted to extend another 6 months. And it was hard for me to fundraise from afar. And what happened actually is my church reached out to the other churches in our presbytery and invited them to also give in order to reach that amount I would need to extend that time. And it turned out wonderful. The Lord always provided everything I needed.
Yeah, just for the audience members that aren't familiar with this, presbytery for us is a technical word for a regional group of churches. You'll actually hear more about that presbytery a little bit later. And you did have the administrative staff of the Orthodox Presbyterian Church helping you with this, correct, with a budget and all that. So
yes,
you weren't doing this alone.
No, never alone. I had a wonderful woman who helped me create my budget and also kept in touch with me throughout the year to make sure that I had everything I needed, to make sure I was on budget, and to see if there was other ways that she could help. She was always there to do that.
Yeah, I think you see when we're talking about longer, short-term mission projects, how this is different. Jackie was not called as a missionary full-time, and it may come at some point, we don't know, but it's clearly longer than the two-week stint, and there is a lot of preparation that goes into that, and you need the infrastructure necessary for it. We're going to talk a little bit more about how your labors helped more than they hurt after this message from the voice of A Visit to the Pastor's Study.
that great city, New York. Metropolitan New York is the largest city in the United States. And with a population of over 20 million people, Metro New York is one of the largest cities in the world. And what's more, Metro New York is home to people from every nation of the world. To reach Metro New York is to reach the world. But churches faithful to historic Reformation Christianity in the Metro New York area are few and far between. The mission fields of Metro New York are America's richest and most neglected. Reformation Metro New York is an agency by which the Orthodox Presbyterian Church is planting and developing biblically faithful churches and church ministries in the Metro New York area. Through Reformation Metro New York, you can help promote the outreach of this program, A Visit to the Pastor Study, and other projects designed to further the ongoing reformation of the church. That and church planting are the great passions of Reformation Metro New York. For more information, check out the website at reformationmetrony.org, where you'll get a personal look at the ministries of the churches, pastors, evangelists, and teachers of the Orthodox Presbyterian Church in the area, and you'll learn how you can be a part of our labors. We need your help. Here's the site again, reformationmetrony.org. Thanks for your interest and your help. Remember that great city, New York. To reach Metro New York is to reach the world. Now back to today's edition of A Visit to the Pastor's Study.
Pastor Bill Shishko here with you for today's edition of A Visit to the Pastor's Study. I want to remind you the phone number to call if you'd like to speak with Jackie Balchi about what we're calling longer, short-term mission projects, 631-955-5400, 631-955-5400. Jackie, in the monologue, I spoke a little about how some, not all, but some short-term mission projects, week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, really can hurt more than they can help. And for those of you listening, probably the best study on this subject appropriately is called When Helping Hurts by Steve Corbett and Brian Fickert. When Helping Hurts, Steve Corbett and Brian Fickert. Any of you involved with mission projects at all, particularly foreign missions projects, you want to read When Helping Hurts, Steve Corbett and Brian Fickert. But obviously, Jackie, you didn't go over this closed field wanting to hurt more than help. How do you believe your longer, short-term missionary work really helped?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think sometimes as a short-term missionary, you wonder, how am I really helping this field? What is the big picture here? And am I really having any impact at all, or am I wasting time? But I do think that the longer short-term mission does help, and it helps in many ways. The first way is that it encourages the longer-term people, the people who are there for the long haul. And the purpose of a missionary associate, in a sense, is to alleviate some of the work of the longer-term missionary. So he doesn't have, for example, as many classes to teach or as many one-on-one meetings that he has to have in order to draw people in. So the missionary associates are kind of the hands and feet. You know, we go out and we meet people and we invite them in and we have Bible studies and we try to do just that. We are bringing people together to come in. We are teaching more classes so that less have to be taught by him. And we're drawing different people in. We all have different personalities. And so in a way, the team there, even of the short-termers, is a manifestation of the church. There are all these different gifts, different personalities, and you're there for a different purpose. You know, a student that or a person that I might reach is not the same as who my other missionary associate might reach. And so in that sense, we're able to have this diverse group of people that come together. In a very practical way, we are also sustaining the school. The school needs a certain number of teachers to continue functioning and to have manageable class sizes. So in that way, the short-term missionaries are very, very important just to keep the work going. In terms of the people who we are working with, I think sometimes a short-term person has more of an impact, and let me explain that a little bit. When people know that you are leaving in X amount of time, they tend to let their curiosity open up a little more. They're not maybe so resistant or thinking, oh, later, later, later. And if they know that you are leaving even sooner, let's say in 1 year, then they might be more willing to meet with you and to get to know, what is this Christianity? What is this that you're sacrificing all of these things to come here and be here? And that curiosity is really driven by by why are these people coming here and giving up whatever it was they had from America, of all places, to come here and talk to me about Jesus. So I think there is a really unique opportunity to plant seeds, and then when you leave, they get watered by the people who are there for a longer time.
Now, did you actually see some of the people that you work with come to faith in Christ and really want to follow him? And in the case of this culture, that's not a culture with a Christian background, certainly they have to be baptized to mark them out as the Lord's people. Did you see that kind of thing?
I did, and it was never, I will say, I never saw someone who I directly worked with, but you see people who we are all working with together. And like I said before, we work together. You know, we pass people off to each other. We fit someone with someone else who might work better with them. And I saw people get baptized, and I saw people just want to come to church or say, yeah, I've been really wondering about this, and it's great that I finally have someone who I can ask these questions to because I didn't know where to go or who to ask. Seeing that fruit is really encouraging and just really exciting to see that.
Now, do you keep contact with the people? You're away from that field, obviously. You keep contact with them? And if so, how? In such a way that it doesn't jeopardize that person in that closed country.
Right, yeah. And that's the other thing that's very encouraging about seeing them come to Christ, is that it is risky for them to be a Christian in this country, and even more so than what we're doing. So in that sense, it's encouraging. And I think in terms of keeping in touch, yes, I do keep in touch with the people there, and it's either by email or some other online communication. In fact, many people might come to visit the U.S., and that's also a really unique opportunity if they do come, and we are now in an open country where I can openly invite them to church and talk more freely. Many of the students come to universities here, and that they actually, a lot of those students become Christians after coming here. And I think they saw a few people in their school, in their home country, who are Christians, but then to come here and see, oh, it's not just them. There are actually a lot of people who believe this, and they become more open when they're visiting.
Yeah. I think I may have given you the article that I'd read in a Christian news publication, and it spoke specifically of students that had come from that closed country, and that's exactly what happened. They had heard the gospel in their country, or some of them hadn't at all, and then they come here and see, particularly in that culture where many are coming to faith in Christ, they themselves would come to faith in Christ when they were here. If you could do it over again, and you want to do this over again in a way, what would you do differently?
What would I do differently? I think, actually, if I could, I would even prepare more culturally before going. I think I naively didn't expect culture shock to really hit me. I thought, no problem.
Now, what was culture shock? Be specific about what.
Well, it's sort of the strange feeling where for the first month of your time there, you just feel really tired all the time and you don't know why. It's listening to a foreign language constantly. That was much more harsh than I anticipated. And I remember coming home and suddenly understanding all the conversations happening around me and thinking, wow, that's really strange. I think the food can be shocking for a lot of people. It can make them sick even. So if you have an opportunity, and here in New York, we do have that opportunity to go and try these different exotic things that you might be experiencing there. But most importantly, I would say, is understanding the mindset of the people there and understanding where they're coming from. I think one of the biggest effects that my trip had on me was becoming so much more aware of how much of my own thinking is really just influenced by being American. And I think, again, naively, I didn't realize that until I started to get to know people there and see how they view the world. So if I could do it all over again, I think I would do that. I would study the culture and the history even more deeply and look for people of that country here and get to know them before going there. Not be so isolated with Americans, but to really just open up your heart to the people who are here. And there are many of them who are here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, having been on that field that you were on at one point, I was very thankful that there was a family from that country that I could speak with, and that few hours with them was worth its weight in gold. Mm-hmm. And for any listening who are considering a short-term project or longer short-term project that we're calling Missionary Associate, the volume that I think is put out by Wycliffe Publishers called African Friends and Money Matters is rich with things you would just never think about that are important cultural differences to be aware of, and also to help us become all things to all people, that by all means we might save some. I don't have a lot of time before the break, but what would be, say, was number one big cultural difference for you, the main thing that stood out in your mind?
Well, I would say one thing that really struck me was the difference from individualistic mindset towards a more community mindset. And I think maybe I thought that we were very community-oriented here, but actually, in fact, we are extremely individualistic. And to see the way that the family unit is really emphasized in the country where I was really starkly contrasted to what I was used to. And in many ways, it was beautiful. I mean, I loved it. And I think it was exciting to really understand that there are really different views of looking at this.
Sure. Well, just as an example of how individualistic we are, this program is not unique, but it's unusual because we focus on church. We love to tell people that we are about church here because while the Lord is saving individuals, he's building his church. So let me just take a moment before we continue with a visit to the pastor's study. And if you'd like to call about short-term missions, 631-955-5400, 631-955-5400. This is the Pastor's Study that you hear every week on WLIE and simulcast on Redeemer Broadcasting. It is a ministry of the Orthodox Presbyterian Churches in Metropolitan New York and Southern Connecticut. And we have churches, if you're in these areas, look them up. Hamden, Connecticut, which is right near New Haven, and Mount Vernon, New York, in Westchester County, Fresh Meadows, that is on the east side of Queens, and then right here on Long Island, where our studio is, in Franklin Square, in Syosset and Bohemia. And we have all that information for you on a visit to the Pastor's Study website. That's www.visitthepastorsstudy, all one word, visit the Pastor's Study. There's two S's in there, pastorsstudy.org. And there you'll find lots of information about the program, archives of past programs. Each one is a self-contained unit, and we mean it to be instructive to you. And you'll also find out more about the Orthodox Presbyterian Church. Now, the broadcast work comes to you from Reformation Metro New York, Incorporated, which is a not-for-profit corporation that produces A Visit to the Pastor's Study, and we have different projects on the drawing boards. You can tell you about that a little bit later. But we would love to have you as part of this special church-focused project. And we can send you more information. Jot down this address, Reformation Metro New York Incorporated, or you can just put down RMNY Inc., Reformation Metro New York Incorporated. Very easy post office box, 234, no 1 in it, no 5 in it, just P.O. Box 234, Franklin Square, New York, and the zip is 11010, Franklin Square. You can just put FS, we'll get it, NY 11010. And if you'd like to contact me personally, it's as easy as an email. You can email me at visitpastorbill. Once again, that's all one word, visitpastorbill@gmail.com. visitpastorbill@gmail.com. And I would very much enjoy hearing from you. Right now, you can reach a visit to the Pastor's Study by calling 631-955-5400. Topic today, short-term mission projects. And we have our second guest, Taryn Diekman. Most of you will know her as Taryn Diekman, but she's now Mrs. Taryn McKim, calling from, I want to say, now let me, it's not Iowa, right?
Oh, goodness.
No. It's Idaho. I knew it was one of these states that begins with an I.
Yes, I'm calling from Idaho Falls, Idaho.
All right.
I'm very thankful to be on with you today. Oh, thank you for having me.
It's great, Taryn Diekman McKim. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your longer short-term mission experience? Where, how long, what was it like?
Well, I spent 2 9-month trips and 1 3-month trip in Uganda in eastern Africa, a rural part of the country in the northeast called Karamoja. The people are mostly semi-nomadic. They keep gardens for food, and they keep cattle as a sign of their wealth, and they mostly live in mud-walled huts with thatched roofs.
All right. And what did you do?
I was working with education, basically. I can flesh that out a little bit. We started a preschool in the local language, for the local children in the villages, and then we branched out from there and ran some what we called backpack schools because we brought everything with us in a backpack to the village. And then we also had the opportunity to work with some of the public schools.
But before you go any further, describe this village. I mean, was it near the compound where you live? Would you walk to it? Was it far away? How did you get to this village, and what was it like?
Oh, we did a lot of walking in Karamoja. I actually didn't get behind the wheel of a car the entire time I was in Uganda. So we would walk to the villages. They were probably, the furthest I walked was probably about a 30-minute walk.
Okay. And what were these villages like? I'm assuming these are not places with McDonald's and 7-Elevens in them, right?
No. Okay. No. Most of these places are not even within walking distance to the nearest, what you think of in America as a farmer's market.
They just got their food that they grew themselves.
Basically, yes, for the most part. Although most of the time they can get to the open-air markets where people are selling other things that they grew themselves.
Okay.
And even things from the nearest town called Mbali, which was about a 3-hour drive in perfect conditions.
Wow. That was the nearest. So you're really dealing, a village is just like a number of huts, a number of thatched roof huts.
They make the fences primarily out of thorn trees and live trees and dead trees woven together, and that's where they keep the cattle in at night. And they also have I can't even say between, because the villages range in such huge ranges of size. There's a number of houses that are in them.
Give it a range. Give us the range a little bit. Are you talking about a dozen, 100, 500?
I would say some of the larger villages could have several dozen houses in them.
All right.
And then some of the smaller villages may have 2 or 3 dozen houses. And, of course, when I say houses, I'm talking about they build their houses by sticking sticks into the ground and covering those with mud, and then building sticks for the roof and covering those with thatched grasses.
Yeah, and Taryn is saying to herself all this time, Taryn, you're not in Long Island anymore.
No, I am not.
All right.
That's right. It was very clear. The culture shock is a very real thing, as Jackie said.
So what did you do when you came to these villages, Taryn?
We would usually set up a tarp and start calling the children to come to school. We would ring a bell and put out some things on the tarp for the children to use. We would bring little miniature chalkboards and little learning books and binaries. And we had several picture books that we had translated into Karamojong. And so we would read those to the children, and then we'd read them again in English. We're trying to build bilingual experiences for the kids.
And you had a good response to this. I mean, this is not the kind of thing that would happen for these folks every day. So you probably had an excellent turnout of young people, correct?
It varied widely. As you expect, education is not the primary focus of a group of people who aren't sure where food is going to come from.
Okay. Well, let's see, there's a cultural difference right away.
It's an incredible cultural difference.
Yeah, okay.
Education is not the primary value for the people of Karamoja.
Yeah, they're
literacy levels are extremely low, even for the adults. And when I say extremely low, I'm talking less than a third of the adults in Karamoja can read.
Right. These are not people that go to the local supermarket to get food that's always there in abundance. It's really subsistence living, correct?
It can be. It depends on the year. I mean, it's very dependent on the weather and the crops and what was grown and how well it grew.
So tell us, Taryn, we started this off with how short-term mission projects, and by that we mean a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, can do more harm than help. How did your work actually help on this field in the northern part of Uganda?
I think the key is in doing things in a sustainable way that the people can someday, if God wills, continue on their own once they have the training that they need. So the goal is to keep yourself from being essential in every way possible.
Okay. So give us some specifics. That's very, very important. That's excellent. Give us some specifics on that.
Okay, so the goal of any teacher is to teach themselves out of the job.
Right.
Now, in this case, I can't do that simply by teaching the preschoolers, because that would take decades to get them to the point where they can do this for themselves. So I also focused intensely on training the teachers. And I was not doing this by myself. I had an incredible group of people working with me that had already been on the field for many, many years.
And how many people are you talking about in this incredible group?
Well, in specific, working with Karamoja Education Outreach, which you can find on Facebook, K-E-O-T-O, we vary between probably three of us at our smallest and five or six of us at our largest groups that we were working with the local people.
Okay. And
but in a larger sense, my entire life in Uganda would have been impossible without the 20 to 30 people that lived on the compound.
Okay, so we're talking about a large compound of people. Do you, of course, you're married now. You were not when you went on the field, although I can point out that you did meet your future husband on that field. That's one of the side benefits. That can be one of the side benefits of longer, short-term mission projects. You want to go back?
And it's also one of the most amazing things about it is that my husband was on one of those shorter short-term mission works that you were talking about. He was only there for a month.
You know, that really did, that was not harmful. That was very helpful.
Yes, it was.
Okay, so do you and your husband want to go back to this field?
My husband and I would love to go back to this field.
Okay, and why?
There are so many reasons, one of which, I would say one of the primary reasons is I feel like my job's not done. You were talking about trying to create sustainability, and that's not there yet. I have a lot more work that I'd love to do with training the teachers. In the meantime, I'm still in contact with the other people who are doing similar and things to what I was doing and trying to help them build those relationships.
So you do keep contact with people over there.
Well, it's nearly impossible to keep contact with the Karamojong people that I know and love.
But the team.
Communication is not like that. But I have been in touch with the people from America who are working over there.
Yeah, so you're able to kind of maybe coach from a distance or provide materials for them?
As best I can.
Okay. And, of course, obviously you pray for the people.
Absolutely.
What would you say was the main lesson that you learned from two terms in the field among the Karamojong? What was lesson number one?
I would say that lesson number one was how little I actually need things to live and how much I can rely on God and the people that He provides to be in my life.
Yeah, because you're dealing with people who they have to depend on the Lord for the rain, and that they get in the rainy season, and there's no way they're going to get the rain down at the local supermarket. Excellent.
No.
What did it mean for you to become all things to the Karamojong that you might win some of them?
Well, I'm certainly not as good at it as I'd like to be, and it's certainly something that I have plenty of opportunity to practice in daily life. But I would say that for me, it meant becoming available with my time in a much larger way than I had experienced before. Because the way that they view time and relationships is absolutely interchangeable. If you won't spend your time, you don't have a relationship.
Yeah, because from Long Island, Long Islanders never have time to do anything because they always schedule about 32 hours for every 24-hour day. I would imagine that was a big cultural change for you.
Yes, indeed. Nice. It's a blessed cultural change for me, though. I really did enjoy that aspect of life there. Uh-huh. And it was very difficult to come back to the hecticness of life in America afterwards.
I'm sure. Well, it's a little bit different, though, out in Idaho Falls than it is on Long Island. Yeah, that's a little bit different there. Well, Taryn Dietman McKim, thank you so much for your contribution to A Visit to the Pastor's Study today. We will pray that the Lord might give you and your husband another opportunity to go serve on that field. Thanks very much. We're going to be back with some wrap-up words from Jackie Belge after this message from the voice of A Visit to the Pastor's Study.
It's not enough to listen to pastors on the radio or to watch them on television. Everyone needs a biblically faithful pastor, and everyone needs a biblically faithful church. A Visit to the Pastor's Study is a ministry of the Orthodox Presbyterian Churches in the metropolitan New York area. We're no substitute for a faithful pastor in a local church, but we are a supplement. Visit our website, www.visitthepastorsstudy.org, and you'll find the ministry of this program extended right to your electronic device. Here you'll find archives of past programs, a weekly message from Pastor Bill's Pastor's Post, helps for pastors, helps for congregation members, material for officer training, and much more. That's www.visitthepastorsstudy.org. And we also invite you to contact the host of this program, Pastor Bill Shishko. You can email him at visitpastorbill@gmail.com. He'd love to hear from you so that he can bring his pastoral ministry to you personally. That's visitpastorbill@gmail.com. Remember, everyone needs a pastor. And now back to today's edition of A Visit to the Pastor's Study.
Pastor Bill Shishko here with you. If you want to call, you don't have much time left. Well, this is a captivating interview. 631-955-5400, 631-955-5400. We're talking about what we are calling longer short-term mission projects, otherwise known as missionary associates, who give a year or two of their lives to serve, particularly on foreign fields. My guest here in the studio is Miss Jackie Belge, who has served on a closed field. And Miss Belge, Jackie, what advice would you give to others considering any form of short-term missionary service?
Well, the first thing I would advise people, and I touched on this earlier, is do get to know the culture and reach out now. I heard a very wise pastor tell me just a few weeks ago, know your circle, know what you have around you now. If you're not serving now, if you're not feeling like you want to share the gospel with people here, then you're not going to do it there. So don't have an idea that your service will start once you arrive. You know, start your service now. Get that practice in now. Work with people here. Secondly, I would say learn the language. This is something I did not do well, and something that you asked me earlier, if I could go back and do it again, what would I do? I do think I would learn more of the language, and I think for me it was very easy because I was teaching English, and I was in a country that was different from Taryn's situation, where the people there do already know some English, and it's a little bit of a safety net for me. I never really had to go deeply into their language, but I do think that would enhance your relationships. And like Taryn said, it's about spending time with people. It is relationship building, and that takes time. And we're also, another cultural difference is dealing with building relationships is not so easy for the people I was working with. They don't want to open up to you. They don't want to go very deeply unless they do know you very well. And I think a lot of that happens when you take that initiative and try to speak to them in their language. I think they very strongly appreciate that.
Every one of those things that you mentioned are lessons we can learn right here in this field.
Absolutely.
Right here in the United States. Yeah. We have a call from Alan Elmont. Welcome, Alan Elmont.
Hello. Jackie and Taryn, who is listening, first I just want to say thank you to both of you for your dedication and service to our Lord. It is really special to see how you both have given of your life and time to do what you really love. I was going to ask you a question, but as I'm on the phone here listening, you answered my question. And that was, you know, what would you say to those that are on the fence that you come across and talk to about why they should consider serving as a missionary, associate missionary on the field. So you gave a pretty good answer already, I think.
You can develop that, though. That's a great question.
Well, I would also add to those who, as you said, are on the fence. I do think there could be a lot of fear about going, and there can be a lot of, as what I faced, and maybe not everyone, was feelings of inadequacy. Like, am I able to really have an impact on these people? Can I really open up to them? And I would say, you know, really just trust God with that and get rid of those fears. I think if you're going, you know, there should be some nervousness. You know, you are heading into the unknown. But to really, one of the verses I really focused on was, unless the Lord builds the house, your work is done in vain. And not to think that this is all on you. You know, you're not, we have this pride to think that we're the hero, we're going to go, we're going to save people. And that can be shut down very quickly when things don't happen quickly. And I think as a short-termer, sometimes you can be really excited, you want to see someone become a Christian, and that doesn't happen overnight. There is, and I think one of the biggest takeaways from my longer short-term trip was getting past that honeymoon stage, as I would call it, where it is kind of exciting and it's new and it's different, but really being immersed in the culture. And that time then became a time of testing, do I want to be here long term? And I think it was more of a practice, maybe, or a test to see, do I fit here? Do I have gifts that work here? Would I come back? And I think if you are thinking about going, you're the right person just because you want to go.
That helpful, Al from Elmont?
Yes, thank you for your explanation and also the thorough explanation that you gave earlier on how one is called and how the steps to work through it with the church.
Yeah.
Thank you again.
Thanks. Right. Thanks, Al from Elmont. Appreciate the telephone call here and the visit to the pastor's study. And I want to emphasize this again. We learned years ago that there's ardor, A-R-D-O-R, and order, O-R-D-E-R. And certainly need ardor in missions, A-R-D-O-R, but there also has to be good order in doing this, working through a local church. If your local church is a body, as we do, beyond the local level, working through those channels, there's not only counsel, prayer, financial support that comes, help with organization, but the Lord doesn't use lone rangers in his kingdom so much as he uses people who work together as teams. Caller asked a website to get involved. I think the best way to do that, and I think you're talking about the Karamojong mission, and I should have had Taryn give that. Probably the best thing, if you'd like further information about the mission among the Karamojong, and it's a fascinating one, you can just email me at visitpastorbill@gmail.com, visitpastorbill@gmail.com. And I'll put you in contact with Taryn. That's a very, very worthy project. Jackie, thank you so much for your time with us today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
This is your radio debut, I believe.
Yes, it is. Oh,
I think she's done very well. Yeah, the engineer said yes. We do things as a team here as well, Jackie.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we've come to the end of another visit to the pastor's study, and I do want to thank not only Ms. Jackie Balchi, but also Mrs. Taryn Dietman McKim from Idaho Falls, Idaho. Just so you know, Taryn and Stuart were married last year in May. They haven't been married for a year yet. And Taryn moved from the rarefied atmosphere of Long Island all the way out to Idaho. And we're hopeful they can go back to work among the Karamojong. I'd love to get your feedback or your questions. As I mentioned before, you can email me at visitpastorbill, that's all one word, visitpastorbill@gmail.com. And I do want you to remember that tomorrow is the Lord's Day. It's what we sometimes call the Christian Sabbath. It's a Sunday. It's the Lord's Day. But you need to set apart time to worship the Lord in a church that is faithful to the Word of God. The Lord's Day is a tremendous mercy to us. Honor it. And as you do that, remember, too, that everyone needs a pastor. Let's take some time to pray. Father in heaven, thank you that the fields of the world are white unto harvest, and we are to pray that as the Lord of the harvest, you thrust forth laborers into the harvest field. And whether they be short-term missionaries who will do more harm than hurt, or help than hurt, or whether it be longer-term missionaries or full-time people, send them forth to serve you for the advancement of your kingdom. Amen.
You've been listening to A Visit to the Pastor's Study, a ministry of Reformation Metro New York. Our website is www.reformationmetrony.org. Again, that's www.reformationmetrony.org. For more information on the program, check out our website at www.visitthepastorsstudy.org. That's www.visitthepastorsstudy.org. pastorstudy.org. Listen in next week at 12 noon for another edition of A Visit to the Pastor's Study. Remember, everyone needs a pastor.